Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Westport Social. Glad you're with us for the Billiken Coaches Show. And I'm glad there's an S on the end of the word because we got two head coaches with us, two for the price of one. Joining us, Rebecca Tillett, head coach of women's basketball at St. Louis University. And, of course, Josh Schertz, our men's head basketball coach. And we're here with both of them at Westport Social. Come out and see us at Westport. And I got on some wings just a few minutes ago, and they were off the charts.
They smell delicious.
Off the charts.
I'm sitting there by him, but I'm showing great discipline only because Natalia's here.
So, looking over your shoulder.
Yes.
Coach Tillett, how are you?
So good. Thanks for having us, and really excited to spend this time together.
So, let's jump right into it. We're in a situation perhaps won't be dissimilar as we move forward. Coach, you had a rough outing not too long ago against Davidson. That might be an understatement. And that was at home.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to Davidson over the weekend and turn it right around on them and win the game. Coach Schertz, we were at VCU a couple of weeks ago. It was not a pleasant experience. Now we've got them at our place, so a little bit different, but at our place. So I'm going to ask the first question to you, without permission, speaking for Coach Schertz. How the heck do you do that? How do you turn around all that kind of scoring and mm-hmm. defense?
You know, I think Coach Schertz is already an expert in this. He doesn't need much advice in it. But, you know, I think it's stay the course with your team and keep teaching and keep learning. And, you know, we said even in our huddle today, kind of talking about the game after we enjoyed watching the film, had we as a group taken steps away from each other after that game, we would not have had the outcome that we had yesterday. Instead, we took steps towards each other, right? Towards leadership, towards better defense, towards figuring out, okay, this is an outcome that's not acceptable to any of us as we're pursuing excellence. What are we going to do about it? And I think that's what our team spent time thinking about, and especially the leadership on our team, our captains, Ken, Bell, Peyton, and then we've newly added Tierra Simon to our leadership council. I think they did a lot of work in the space to help us get where we needed to go.
And, you know, Coach Schertz, you and I have talked about it, and we have too, Coach Tillett, in that when you have a player-coached team, we've talked about it in particular with Robbie Avila, that it makes things better. It's not a great word, but, you know, it's that's kind of where you're trying to go with it.
Yep.
Isn't that right? And, yeah. And so those are the things. Now, we've had a couple of games in between since that VCU game, but I know nobody's forgotten it.
No, I agree. I think, you know, if we say, you know, as a coach, if I'm having to drag the players, you know, every season you're trying to climb a mountain. If the coach is dragging the players, you got no chance. If you're walking in lockstep, coaches and players, you have a chance. If the players are, you know, walking and dragging the coaches, you're going to win a championship. And I think, you know, that takes time to build that. I think you have to, but having a guy like Robbie certainly helps. And the players take it better from their peers. You know, there's a level of holding each other accountable, caring enough to hold each other accountable, doing in a way that you know, you got to have confrontation, but it's got to be, it can never be personal. That's our rule. You know, they can have confrontation, can't be personal. Got to look each other in the eyes, and then they got to have a solution. They got to leave it with a solution. So, I think for us, we certainly remember the game well. VCU, you know, we played 20 games. It was by far the best team I think we've played so far. What Rebecca did and her team and her staff, you know, that's inspiring for us because, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, you know, they flipped that in a huge way from the result, and I think it was a similar amount of time. It was a couple weeks between the games. The venues are different, but, you know, that's what makes competitive sports amazing is, you know, it's There's no carryover. Each game's its own mosaic. Each game's its own entity, and it's not the Tour de France. You don't keep your points and keep the lead. You start back from zero every single time, and so that's a great inspiration for our guys. We talked about that today with our guys in film.
So, Coach Tillett, what did you do defensively, whether it's X's and O's or effort and focus? You know, I always believe anybody can defend. It's technique and desire. Mm-hmm. I can teach you technique, but the desire is up to you. And so what did you all do differently, yep, or better, I should say?
For sure. There's a couple things. I think we made a couple of defensive changes as a unit. You know, the players, I hope they're listening tonight, but, you know, good old-fashioned zigzag, right? We brought it back. We brought it back in between that game and this game. And, hey, we got to get down. We got to get in a stance. Just a simple drill, and it's become a little bit of a back and forth with the team of, is it on the schedule today? Because it's not the most enjoyable drill, but it's also helps us. And then I do think there were a couple strategy things. You know, the CBS commentators were actually in our practice the day before observing. And we have, you know, I'm a former teacher. We've got multiple teachers or teachers' kids on our staff. And we've got, like, teaching signs up in the gym all the time. And they're taking pictures, and we're in mindfulness. And three people come during mindfulness to whisper in my ear, hey, Tillett, they're taking pictures. Are you okay with this? Is it okay if our is our offense allowed? You know, and I'm like, it's okay. But just the connectedness. And then I think strategy-wise, we actually had a bit of a tense moment. But to Josh's point, we say confront immediately and let nothing linger. We felt like one of the game plan ideas for Davidson in round two became too cumbersome for our team. And we were like, but we figured that out in practice the day before and said, okay, we got to simplify one aspect of this. And we did it. And we do think that's a big part of it. So I think the team's decision to play better together, and we're going to change this result, and then a little bit of strategy mixed in too.
Coach Schertz, I love talking to you about strategy and why you do things. My point about technique and desire, do you agree with that? I know it's a really overly simplified point, but you can teach technique, but desire has to come from the player. It's got to come from inside.
Yeah, I think so much of defense is the invisible plays, you know, because there's a lot that happens on defense that, you know, doesn't appear in the box score. And we talk a lot about invisible plays, and there's so much subtlety and nuance. No one in the media is like, you know, let me talk to Rammer. His ball pressure was so elite in the game. Rammer just canceled so many ball screens today.
Yeah, no, like, one's ever said
get him
that.
Up.
That's,
you know,
never been spoken.
Yeah, not
before.
For you in general, right. But I'm just talking about even if you did those things. Deflect. There's so much that happens inside on that end of the floor that, you know, are those invisible plays that drive winning. And the only, you know, the only people that make them are people that are super committed to team success and winning. And if you're not, then you're not going to do those tough things. And defense is a lot about our whole thing is competing together. And I think those are two things you can control. You can control your compete level. You can control your togetherness. You don't need any talent to do those things. Defense is so much competing together, like a simple ball screen. You know, the person setting the screen has to call it. They have to talk to each other. The person guarding the ball has to get into it and force it a certain direction. They got to execute a coverage, whether that's switch or show or drop or whatever the coverage may be. And all those things are, and then the other three people, the ball have to shift in and help and be positionally sound based on where the ball screen happens. And so competing together, that's just one example, but that's what makes basketball awesome, is it's a constant stream of that on both ends of the floor. But you're right. I mean, defense is something where, you know, if you're competing, if you're communicating, if your effort level and physicality are at the highest level, you can be a good defense player. The other piece of that is, you know, the details and whatever your game plan is, your scouting report is, are you executing the details of it? But that's the whole thing on that end of the floor. And it's much easier to get good at defense than it is to get good at offense.
And Coach Tillett, on social media, you know, what did you call it? Shadow?
Invisible.
Invisible
plays.
Invisible plays. And you mark that, you track that stuff and put it on social media. I think it's fascinating.
We do. We track unselfish plays. You know, and it's the same thing that Coach is talking about. There are things that players do that, you know, people who love the game a lot recognize. Those of us that spend our life studying it see it. We want our teams to know that there's value in that. Even so far as, like, we have something called a box out assist. Like, you're somebody that kept the person from getting the rebound. You're not getting any statistic for that, but you are in our program. Because We know if you didn't do that, then your woman might have come in and knocked it loose or given somebody else a possession. We track the hockey assist to call it a double assist. Yeah, a lot of those things. And I think our women really appreciate that they're recognized for those efforts. And we know that those efforts directly impact your ability to win.
Yeah. Well, I feel good because Earl and I try to mention those things whenever we do see him, because it is important.
Well, that's all the stuff that drives winning. You know, I mean, there's things offensively, you know, just spraying the floor to open the floor up. I mean, setting a great screen, you know, rim decisions, you know, a cut, a second cut. You know, I mean, there's so many things inside the game that don't get box score validation that, you know, there's a big difference. You know, well, not a big difference. It's not synonymous. You could be a great player and not be a great winner. And you could be a great winner and not be a great player. And the best players are both. Now, the best players. But there's a lot of great players who aren't great winners, because that's a totally different deal when you're talking about. But the best players are both. They're fully committed to winning and all the tough things that do it, and they're also great players. But I've had a number of guys that I love coaching that I didn't think were great basketball players, but, man, were they great winners. And so whatever it took to get the job done, all the small, dirty, hard, tough things you got to do to win games, you know, they were willing to do that, and that drove those teams to the success that we had.
For both of you, Rebecca, you first, talk about when you see things start to click. In your time here, as the season goes on and we get close to March, we have seen women's team, it starts to click. And Coach, you and I talked, I think, and specifically about defense with the men's team this year, starting to see things click. And talk about when you see that and you know, the kind of gratification you get, and then how to give that back to the team.
Absolutely. You know, first, I want everybody listening, we're trying to do it sooner, so just know we're working hard on it.
Yeah, you don't want to wait.
We actually started today our file. Coach Holmes has been with me forever, and we have a file that's like, do better next year. And I was like, start it today. But add these three things that we already know we need to do better next summer. So anyway, everybody know that we're working on it. I think there's also a little bit of a feeling. Like, you get a feeling for when teams start to figure things out, to when they really start to play for each other. And you're teaching that all the time, right? You know, some people say, well, haven't you been teaching that? Yes, we've been teaching it, right, since every day that we've been together. But teams are a group of individuals that have to find a way to work together.
They're people, not numbers, right?
Exactly. And we as people change daily. So you're trying to get the group to figure those things out together. I think, you know, as our team finds a way to figure these things out together, there's a feeling that you get. And there's a way that those teams behave that are on the pursuit of a championship. And they behave differently than other teams. And for our team right now, the Davidson win is that feeling, that when they really commit to the process together and celebrate one another's success in a way that's different than maybe they did before. It doesn't mean they weren't doing it before. They're doing it better now.
And you've seen that on the defensive side, Coach.
Absolutely. You know, we went, you know, we were, I think, non-conference play. I think we were last in the league in defensive efficiency. And, you know, and it's seven games, so it's not a huge sample size. But we're first in the league in defensive efficiency and first in the league in field goal percentage and points per game allowed and all those different categories. And, you know, it's the same personnel. You know, nobody got taller or more athletic, or, you know, we're competing together better on that end of the floor. And that's really what defense is. I mean, it's the ability to, you know, it's five people, you know, playing as hard as they possibly can on a string and everybody moving in concert. I've always said, you know, the best team builder in the world over a retreat or putt-putt or anything you could do is to get good defensively. Because if you can get good defensively, the amount of trust that requires, communication, effort, you know, connectedness, like, there's nothing better to build team spirit than getting really good defensively. And it took our guys a while. I mean, we're you know, Rebecca's in a different, you know, phase in terms of her program, where they are, than we are. You know, they've won two championships. I know she doesn't want the track record, but a track record of being able to take maybe a start that's not great, and they're at their best when it matters most, which is the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And they've proven that, right? So for us, we're just establishing a foundation, and we're trying to lay principles and values of, like, how we prepare, how we compete, what does it look like, what's the level of resilience, how much effort do we play with, what's our toughness level, physical, mental, you know, and those type of things that you're laying groundwork for. And we've come a long way. Like, the team that you know, let go of the rope at Wichita State, and I called him out for it, where we didn't shoot well and we lost by 25 because we stopped playing. Mm-hmm. You know, we shot the ball poorly the last three games, and we're able to win two of the three. And we gave ourselves, we had a shot to tie that game, you know, despite, yep. Shooting, you know, whatever, we shot 19% from three the last, you know, three, four games.
Yeah.
We're able to win, you know, two of those three games because of, you know, we're now a resilient bunch. We're now, you know, we're down 13 with 5 minutes play. We come back and get it a one possession game, a chance to tie it. Richmond, we're down 7 with whatever, 4.5 to play. We come back and win that game. So we've made progress. It's not where we want to be. We're flawed. We got a long way to go. But, you know, we're certainly starting to see the fruits of that. And with this team, you know, offensively, we're a little bit limited with all the, you know, different pieces we're missing. We have to be great defensively to give ourselves a chance to win. That's got to be our identity. It's not the same team we had at Indiana State last year. So we don't have the same margin for error. We
right.
can't afford to – we got to be elite on that end of the floor to have chances to win games, I think.
Rebecca Tillett, Josh Schertz, they're with us on the Billiken Coaches Show. We're at Westport Social. Come by and see us out at Westport right next to the Gold Tower. I recommend the Wings. Hope we see you here. And thanks for listening on KMWX. We'll be right back in just a moment on the Billiken Coaches Show. And welcome back to Westport Social on the Billiken Coaches Show. We've got women's head coach Rebecca Tillett. We got men's head coach Josh Schertz. And we had one of our great fans and listeners want to know a little bit about recruiting. Not necessarily the names and that sort of thing. And a quick aside from me is that I feel like I learned a long time ago as a fan is that I don't get too caught up into it. You know, everybody's, they're a top 100. They're a three-star. They're a whatever. And I go, well, let's see if they can play when they get to school and are a Division I player. All those ratings are all real nice, but I don't know if they can play. I know Coach likes them. That's why they signed them. But let's see. So there's my sort of, okay, wait and see disclaimer. But I think what's more important, and the question was really about, and both of you, I think there's some similarities in not just recruiting players, but recruiting people. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate, Coach?
Absolutely. I think there's a couple things. You know, from the basketball side, we've done some research in terms of what pops up in our evaluation notes. And the players that typically get signed with us, the word toughness or they're tough comes through all the time, like in our evaluations. And also that they make smart team plays, right? They're about the team game. That comes up. And then through the process, right, these are people that you're bringing in to your most intense moments and a really important time in their lives, right, where they're developing as young people. So you do a lot of research to find out, are these the people that are going, that one, we can help, right, and two, they can help each other pursue excellence together.
Yeah, and so, Coach, anybody can see, oh, that guy's a great player, but yeah. Can he play for me?
Right. I think you got to know what you want to coach. I mean, similar to Rebecca, you know, we really tried to find it. You know, talent's super important. Obviously, that's always going to be king in anything. Talent, you know, plus competitive character, you know, and I think for us, we always look at, we want players that are high processing, you know, that understand the game, are good decision makers. You can never have enough good decision makers. Guys with good skill sets, and then guys with plus positional size. Just think if you can, it gives you versatility on both ends of the floor. And you know, if you have big guys that can make decisions, it makes the decision making easier because they can see over, and then they give you the versatility defensively.
Yeah.
And then you know, I mean, competitive character. We could talk all day about that. But in the day, like really, what we're looking at is, you know, guys. We want guys who are great competitors, great teammates.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's really the simplistic explanation.
And so, for both of you, and jump in, have you gambled in your careers on players that you weren't sure and your fears were realized that I took a gamble on a player and I shouldn't have? Or on the other hand, have you taken gambles on players and it turned out to work out for you? You know, gamble on, you know, whether it's toughness, Rebecca, or Josh, whether it's, you know, the kind of teammate you want to be, that sort of thing. Can you think, and because you've both been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
I think, you know, what happens sometimes is it's the makeup of the entire roster that can determine if that decision was correct or incorrect. So sometimes, you know, I'm not sure I would use the word gamble, but you're putting the factors together of what that person brings to the team and to the group. And then sometimes when you bring in a person, if it doesn't fit in the chemistry space as a group, then it can feel like, I'm not sure if I made that right decision. So I think that's why we try to research as deeply as possible. But as you do that, you're still bringing them in with another group of people
right.
that they have to interact with and grow with. And so I think certainly you learn, and Coach spoke to this, and I think I've definitely learned this over the years, and I heard Gino speak about it recently. You learn what you're best at as a staff, too, like best at coaching. And so if you're looking for that player that responds to your type of leadership, I think that's another part of the equation. If the player I'm going after doesn't respond to my type of leadership, then I'm putting that player at a disadvantage by bringing them into our system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think recruiting, your job is to handicap the odds of somebody being successful. And then if they're not successful, would that be something that would be detrimental to the entire team or just the person? You know, like I think there's red flags or gambles that you could take that maybe on an individual person because of talent. And you think that, hey, in this environment, they could really, you know, thrive. And sometimes that doesn't work. And sometimes it does. But you're always handicapping odds. I mean, there's no guaranteed player that, you know, you take.
Right.
And there's always been players that have been, you think something and they turn out to be maybe way better than you thought they were going to be, or sometimes they turn out to be way worse than you thought they could be, or sometimes they turn out to just be exactly what you thought. But the goal, or at least the way I look at it, is you're handicapping the odds and what the obstacles are to that person or being successful in your program, and then you try to make decisions of that. But the biggest thing you can't ever do is take somebody that you think could be, if they did fail, that they could bring other people with them. Like somebody failing individually is much worse than like, hey, I think somebody could do something illegal, and that would bring maybe that steam the whole program. Or, hey, I think this person is super charismatic, and they have the ability to influence others, and I think they could do some wrong things, and they could maybe take other people. You know, that's a big difference to me when you're talking about risk-reward with a player. You're always handicapping, because if you knew 100%, that'd be awesome, then we wouldn't make any mistakes. But you never know, you know, you think and you hope, and then you know, you just do the best you can with what you have. But that's what we're all doing, is handicapping the odds.
And then there are kids that figure it out over the long run. I go back to the last time the men's team was in the NCAA tournament in 2019. We had a guy come in, very heralded, Tremaine Isbell. He wouldn't mind if I was talking about him, because he struggled. He struggled not only as a player, but I think they go hand in hand, but being part of the team. He just, you know, we'd go to practice and shoot, like you'd go to a shoot around on a road game, and he'd be sitting by himself, off by himself, and you could tell it wasn't fitting. And then about the end of January, right about this time, something, I don't know what it was, but something started to click, and he became, I think, part of the team first, and then the good play came along, and without him, we don't win the conference tournament. There's no chance of winning the tournament without him. And to see that light switch go on for a kid, really remarkable. I was really happy for him.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, you never know. These kids are on their own journeys. You know, you recruit people. You try to, you know, help them become professionals, whether it's a professional basketball player or professional. Like, that's our job as coaches, to help them become professionals and in life. And then you try to work hand in hand with them to explore their potential together, right? Like, that's what we do as coaches. Like, you recruit human beings, you try to help them become professionals, and then you explore their potential, and everybody's running their own race. So sometimes, you know, it could take a year or two for the light to come on. Sometimes it never comes on. Sometimes people walk in, it's like a fish in water, and they just, hey, I adapt right away. I get it. I see it. But for most kids, it doesn't, you know, it's not like a knife through butter. You know, there is resistance and regression, and regression and resistance and friction aren't bad. It's actually
coming out the other side is what matters.
It helps shape you and mold you and make you better. Like, if we didn't have resistance and friction, then we would have no standards, you know.
Yeah.
And so your standards would wilt. And so I think for young people to have that, you know, and the ones I've had, you know, there is a process, and they go through it, and then the ones that have resilience and toughness, they make it through. And then you're like, man, they come out the other side, and you see a kid like a story like that with Tremaine. And there's been plenty in my career, I'm sure the same for Rebecca, where, you know, a person looks lost or like, man, I don't know if they're ever going to get it. Light's going to come on. And then it does. But, you know, Rebecca's point is the best point of the night is that coaching is teaching. You know, the best coaches are teachers. And your teaching in your classroom is the basketball court, but it's no different than teaching any other class. And everybody learns different. And people learn faster or slower. If you're teaching math class, not everybody comes in with the same level of you know, acuity in terms of the math and all that. So it's the same thing in basketball. And you got to teach to where your students understand it. And again, it takes a longer time for everybody. But you got to pour into them. You got to try to figure out a best way to reach them. And you never know when that light bulb comes on. But usually, if you stick with it for almost every case, kids figure it out.
I'm late for a break, but real quick, both of you. Coach Tillett, recruiting has been good.
Yes.
This winter, you're very excited?
We're very excited. Already have three signed, and then we'll look forward to the spring recruiting. That's part of our cycle now.
How many more do you think you'll bring in?
You know, the new JUCO ruling is putting a twist on some things for us in a good way.
I don't know it. Tell me the ruling.
JUCO players that are to graduate this year have an additional year now.
So they can get the five.
Yeah, so that can do some good things for our Billiken. So that'll dictate how we move forward.
Coach Schertz, you signed several. Are there more spaces?
Yeah, we signed three early. We signed a kid that wound up, I mean, we signed him, he was a no-star player. Now he's a four-star kid out of Oklahoma. So he's had a great year. He's turned into a four-star kid, I think first one here in a while. He's now number one player in the state of Oklahoma. And then signed to another kid out of Michigan, another kid out of Texas. So really excited with those three, and we'll have spots in the spring. You know, obviously we have a couple of seniors, but then we have a couple guys that are already left. And then I think the ruling now, we have two extra scholarships. So they bumped it from 13 to 15. So we'll have space to add, you know, probably three or four players in the spring, I would think, at least.
Very good. That's Rebecca Tillett and Josh Schertz. I'm Bob Ramsey. It is the Billiken Coaches Show. We're live at Westport Social. Stay with us. We'll be back with more in a moment. All right. We've opened up a can of worms with our listeners here. This is the Coaches Show, the Billiken Coaches Show from Westport Social. Glad you're with us. We've got Rebecca Tillett and Josh Schertz. So I'll ask you both. And I think this is a really good question because our world of college athletics, we were talking about the JUCO rule, and how do you approach team continuity in the NIL world? Yeah. And post-NIL, is it a problem? Is it something that you let take its course naturally? Do you address it? How do we deal with it? Who wants to go first?
I'll go. I think it starts with, I think the biggest piece is what your collective is, right? I mean, and now it turns into the institution. So, you know, every institution is going to be able to decide what their commitment level is to whatever sport it is.
Yeah, that's a big change, too.
Right? I mean, it's no longer just like fundraise money. It's money that the institution, I mean, you can do whatever you want, but. You know, they actually paid now directly from the school starting July 1st, as long as this settlement goes through.
Right.
Which the expectation is it will.
Right.
So with that as a backdrop, I think that's so much of it. And then, you know, like anything, I think our NIL needs to be used to try to retain our really good players. I think that's the biggest thing, like the way we play, the way we want to build our program. We want to be able to bring guys in, develop them, retain them. I think corporate knowledge is a huge part of our success. I think, you know, get old, stay old is everybody says that, which I think is true. But I think, you know, getting old together, mm-hmm. you know, is a missing piece. And there's such value in shared experiences. And if you're just redoing it every year with a brand new team, I think you're just kind of rolling the dice. And some years it'll come up. You know, in some years it'll fail.
It'll just fail. Yeah.
And you'll just be constantly in a state of, you know, hoping that you got it right. And I think, you know, the model programs, you know, you look at places like Marquette, Purdue, now they're high majors, but you know, if we do our job right and the school is committed in terms of the collective piece, you'd hope there's a mutual commitment between the program, the school, and the best players. And then you can retain those guys year after year. You build with them. And that's going to be, if we're here, I don't think at St. Louis, unless you're at a place with bottomless resources, which we're not going to be, then I don't think you can have sustainable success without continuity. So if you can't have sustainable success without continuity, then you got to do a great job of recruiting the right people, developing the relationships, having the culture, but then you also got to have the you know, people will stay for less, but they won't stay for, they might stay for, you know, 30 cents on the dollar, not going to stay for a penny on the dollar.
Coach Tillett, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, really excited that this conversation is, you know, related to women's sports as well.
Yes.
Just like we just got the units on the women's side and revenue distribution for women, that obviously has been on the men's side forever. This is big movement on the women's side. So I think, you know, to Coach's point, as you build your roster, right, what are you thinking about as you build it? And obviously now NIL is part of that decision making. I think for us, we want to continue to recruit freshmen in addition to access every part of, you know, the model that you can find the best players. So, you know, can you go in the portal and find a great player? And obviously in the portal, the market is higher in terms of the NIL space. And then the best freshmen, you're going to need to be able to compete in that space as well. So I think for us, it'll be a balance of that, right? We've had some success getting some great players from junior college. We've also had some freshmen that develop and then also go into the transfer portal, which is showing right now on our team. So I think being able to be nimble and flexible in your thinking as a staff and coach and institution as well, and staying committed to what it can look like. And then I think the best coaches, we love strategy, right? So there's strategy involved in this too. Right. So we can either bemoan it and say it's not the way it used to be, or we can say, hey, this is the new way. How do we be successful in this model?
I wanted to ask you both about where we are as a university and your respective teams, and where we fit in nationally and where the league fits in. And, you know, I've always felt, and with so many changes, I could be way off now, but I was convinced for decades that you want to be in a league that looks like you, right? Now I see leagues that are just mashed together. I don't know where it's all going to go. I don't know that anybody knows where it's going to go. Does that still matter, being in a league where you look like the people you're, you know, and not just on the floor, but with you know, revenue and recruiting and facilities and all those things? Does that still matter?
You know, I think the league profile matters. I think certainly with the NCAA tournament and the competition preparation for your unit to be successful when you make it, right,
yep,
to the NCAA tournament, I think that's part of it. You know, I just think as we move forward, you know, we don't know the landscape and what exactly it's going to look like. How are we going to respond to those changes, right? The A-10 for the women's side is really competitive. We're getting back to more projections of multiple bid league, which is important because it hasn't been that way for us in the past couple of years. But when I was growing up watching the A-10, right, on the women's side, it was.
Yep.
And so there's been a real push for that on the women's side to get back to that. And I think, you know, as we move towards that, that raises our profile as a league as well. And I think competitive, our league is, we already have every team in our league has either lost or won a game. There's nobody that's going to go undefeated, and there's nobody that's going to lose every game, which is pretty typical on the women's side recently.
And Coach Schertz, so when you look at it, a little bit different situation sometimes for some leagues, schools that have football and the culture and the money that go with that versus schools that do not. So sorry to repeat myself, but do you think it's important to look like the rest of your league, or is that going away?
I mean, I think, you know, the whole thing you're trying to do is you want to be in a league that you have a pathway to the NCAA tournament, you know, whether that's as an automatic qualifier or at large. Obviously, at large is the, you know, is the path you want, because that takes the winning the conference tournament or having to win the conference tournament out of the equation. You know, the A-10's been a multiple bid league. But, you know, it is hard. It's getting harder in today's, you know, modern time, unless they expand a tournament, you know, to qualify as a non-Power Four conference.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way the, you know, the Power Five schools or Power Four schools now can, you know, the way they can schedule. And they can schedule in a way that and then they get their net set and they can kind of play. And they dictate the terms, and they're not going to come to, you know, Chaffetz Arena, you know, and
that's right.
And that's just a part of the deal. So you're going to get them. If you do get them, you're going to get them on a neutral floor, and you got to take care of your business. And we saw, like, you know, Dayton played a great non-conference played them all at home, neutral, won a bunch of them. But this league's tough, and they lost a couple games early, and then it was like, oh, well, they're out of the field. And so, like, all the work they did was gone. Now that won't be the case as we go on. I think Dayton's, got an at-large, level team. I think VCU yeah. does in our league as well. I think both those teams will have at-large resumes, and then depending on who wins the conference tournament. But, I think that's the most important thing is, you would rather be I don't know how to frame it the right way. Like, you would rather be, if you're on the men's side and you're at the bottom of the A-10 and NIL collective, you're better off to be in the Missouri Valley and be the top of the A-10 and be the top of the Missouri Valley and collective.
Yeah.
Because you have a better chance to get the NCAA tournament in that league, right? Now, the goal would be to get in the best league you can be in that has the most bids, because that gives you the most units. So, I think the A-10's got an opportunity to be a multi-bid league, but I think it always goes back to, now with the NIL space, it's much more that as your peers, more so than, than, okay, academically we align. Because, I think we consider, at least at St. Louis, from what I understand, a lot of our peers are like Xavier
yeah.
and Creighton and Georgetown and schools like that. Well, they're our peers maybe from an institutional standpoint. Because of the Big East, they're not our peers in the NIL space.
Right.
For us to just jump to that, to jump the Big East and say, well, those are our peer schools, that's great. But if we didn't make the commitment to do it, then it wouldn't be great, because we would be at the very, what where Seton Hall is right now, which is at the very bottom of that league.
Yeah.
Because in today's world, that's like, I guess the equivalent would be like it's going to play without scholarships. Like, say we're going D1. We're going to play in the Atlantic 10. We're just not going to give anybody scholarships. We're going to have a D3 model in the A-10. And even if you do at that point happen to hit on a great player, you can't retain them anyway, because they're going to go somewhere else.
Because they do well.
Somebody's going to say, okay, we're going to pay them more. So every great player you get, you're guaranteed to lose. So I think that's the most important thing, is being in a league where you feel like that can maximize the amount of bids, because that benefits everybody. Like Rebecca said, not just getting there, but winning games. Because like last year, the A-10 sent two teams in the men's side. They both won their first round games. That's a good year for Atlantic 10, men's basketball. Can we send three teams? Can we send four teams? The more teams that go in advance, the better it is, not just for those three or four schools, but it is for the Atlantic 10 as a whole. And that's where we're trying to get to. That's what everybody's working towards. And that's certainly where we want St. Louis to be as a team that year in, year out. Is competing not just to get the tournament, but to win games the tournament.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back to Westport Social for the Billiken Coaches Show, we want to look ahead to what both squads have coming up this week. Big week for everybody. We'll talk about that. Stay with us right here on KMOX. Back on the Billiken Coaches Show, we're at Westport Social. They're our hosts on Monday evenings. Glad you're with us tonight. And let's take a look ahead. First, Rebecca Tillett, you got two games coming up. George Mason on Wednesday, Fordham on Saturday. And I know we don't look ahead.
Just
one foot in front of the other. George Mason, that's Education Day and a tradition, 11 o'clock in the morning. What does Mason bring, and what does that time of the day bring? For you guys are up working out at 4 in the morning or something crazy. So,
well, it's special. For one, right now in our locker room, thanks to Alex's work on our staff, there's all these pictures that the students drew or essays that they've written for contests to come to our game. So it's a great reminder for our women of the young people that we play in front of and have the potential to inspire.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. And then two, Mason brings toughness, physicality, good defense, and good rebounding. So we're going to have to work for our scores, and then we've got to match that toughness early in the game in terms of our defensive intensity and, feel good coming out of our last performance and what we did in that space. We'll need to, as my brother Nate, who's a great coach, says, rinse and repeat. We'll need to do that again.
Yeah. And then I know you want to look ahead to Saturday, but a 7 o'clock game on Saturday against Fordham.
Yeah. Fordham has some really interesting results this year in terms of some people they've played really close or upset, and then some other games, unusual results. So it'll be fun to study them. But like you and I were saying off air, you see them when you're prepping for somebody, but all focus right now is on Mason.
Yep. Coach, so the rematch with VCU tomorrow night. And, of course, that's a 7 o'clock game. Is it mascot night, I think? Something like that, mascot night. So I'll have a bunch of kids out. That'll be great. And I implore our fans, we got to get Chaffetz rocking. We've got to show VCU not only we match them on the court, but atmosphere matters, doesn't it?
We have a game tomorrow night? I didn't know. I knew I was forgetting. I could not remember what I was forgetting. Oh, okay. No, we did.
We'll just roll the balls out. And
we took today off. I didn't even know. Yes, we need the show. I thought VCU's environment was great down there.
It is really good always.
They just had, you know, they obviously sold it out, and band was great, and certainly we want to create that at Chaffetz for our players, and we got to earn that too, right? I mean, you got to earn it through your performance. You got to earn it through the way you play, how connected you guys are. Obviously you got to win, you got to entertain. I think there's all those things to it, but. You know, it's a chance for us on the men's side. I think going into the season, they were pretty consensus the top two teams in the league. I would think, you know, 7 games in, you would say those are still, even though Dayton had some hiccups early, the top two teams in the league. So it's a great challenge. It's a great opportunity for our fans to come out. And I think, you know, our team needs that. You know, they need that win behind their back, for the stands to – That's the great part about playing at home is, you know, when you're struggling, they can lift you.
Yeah.
When the fans are into it and there's an environment, it's rocking, you know, you can feed off that. Your players can feed off that. And I know, we're really looking forward to it. Not just, you know, VCU, obviously, but, you know, Dayton on Friday, two massive home games against, in my opinion, you know, right now the two best teams in the league. And a great chance for us to challenge ourselves and also a great chance for us to get better and get some confidence, see where we are.
And to stay at the top of the league.
Absolutely.
Stay in the hunt. And I want to remind everyone, very important, the Dayton game is the Billiken Blizzard. Wear white T-shirts. We've probably given out a bunch. Free white T-shirts going out. It'll be a ton of fun in that regard. But it's a 6 o'clock start. Don't forget, if you show up at 7, you've missed most of the game.
Yep.
6 o'clock on Friday against Dayton in the Billiken Blizzard. And tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Coach Tillett. It's always delightful to talk to you. I'm glad you came out. I hope we can do it some more like this.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Love the questions and certainly the time with Coach Schertz.
Coach, thanks. We'll see you tomorrow night, and we'll have fun in the post game.
Sounds good, Raymond.
I'm feeling it.
I hope you're right. It'll be good. Our guys are ready to go. So should be a heck of a ball game. Looking forward to it. We're excited, and always cool to hang with Coach Tillett and you as well. We just miss Earl, but I'm sure he's listening at home.
Yeah, he's either there or at a high school game.
He is, and he's got his phone to his ear still listening.
There's no question about it.
Earl's tuned in. We know that.
There's no question about it. So a reminder, once again, Wednesday at 11, the women will be at home. And then tomorrow night, Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, the men are at home with the showdown rematch against VCU. So for Rebecca Tillett and Josh Schertz and Jim Jackson, I'm Bob Ramsey. Thanks for joining us at Westport Social. We'll see you next time right here on KMOX.